is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we're jumping on to hit on some NBA headlines over the last week. Jay, start us off.
So yesterday it was announced that Carmelo Anthony, Western Conference Player of the Week, along with Giannis, the Eastern Conference. We'll talk a little bit about Giannis later, but your thoughts on Carmelo receiving the Western Conference Player of the Week. Was he deserving of it?
All right, well, number one, I think you have to just look at it and say it's pretty incredible what he's doing, that he's even getting out and playing the amount of minutes and the amount of time that he's playing. And I know he's not having an unbelievable impact. He's not the Carmelo Anthony of the prime of his career, but he's averaging right now almost 18 a game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. He's playing, as you said, almost 30 minutes a game. It's kind of incredible that he's at that point. And so I think it's interesting that the league rewarded him for what he's done to this point. I'm not sure that there wasn't, I don't really know who I'm comparing him to, but I think
Harden's
the league office.
Harden's not your favorite player, but he had like a 66 point game and he
scored 60 in 31 minutes.
Yeah. And then Luka's stat lines have been pretty ridiculous. I'm under the impression that I'm okay with Carmelo getting it, considering the fact that a month ago he was literally sitting on his couch, and he's now playing meaningful, productive NBA minutes. And here's the thing: Portland went 3-0, and I honestly think, Mike, that do they do a comeback player of the year in the NBA?
That's a good question.
I know they do in baseball and football, but I don't know that they do one in NBA. But you'd have to think that if he keeps this up,
I don't think so.
You got to think if they did do the award, and he continues this pace, and I think it's unrealistic for us to assume that he's going to continue at the pace that he's playing. But if he was to continue, he would have to be the person to win it. I mean, Jesus, he literally, like we've said time and time again, literally rolled in off the streets and is playing 30 minutes in the NBA. And the question you have to ask yourself, really, and is how the heck did no other team even take a look at him? It was almost like he was, I don't want to say he was blackballed in a sense, but it's very strange and peculiar that obviously, you know, had...
Yeah, but here's the question. So I got two questions for you. One, first question is, is he, at this point with what he does, is he impacting winning?
Well, I think you would argue last week that he impacted winning. The team went 3-0 and he was leading the team in scoring in those three games.
Okay, they weren't exactly facing a murderer's row of teams.
Listen,
You played the Bulls twice, who are complete garbage this year, and then you got the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, I get it. I understand.
He's being productive tonight, though, Mike. I mean,
yeah, look. You can only look. I'm not anti Carmelo. Like I disagree with what you said a minute ago, where you said that I don't know if he can keep this up for the rest of the season. I mean, if he's going to play 30 minutes a game, I don't see why there's any reason why he can't continue to average 17 points a game and 6 rebounds. If they're going to play him 30 minutes a game, I definitely see him being able to keep up that production. My question is, if Carmelo Anthony is playing those 30 minutes a game, even if he's scoring 17 and getting 6 rebounds,
yeah,
is that going to get them to where what their preseason expectations were, which was they really thought they had an opportunity to break through and make it to the NBA Finals?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're an NBA Finals team, Mike, but
no,
I definitely think I think they're back in consideration for the playoffs, though. I will say that, because we've got the top 6 teams in the West, and then it kind of drops off, and they're only a game and a half out, and they're playing much better now that Dame's healthy, and Carmelo has been productive, and I think the biggest thing that I've seen, and a game started tonight. I don't know how much you've watched of this Clipper Trailblazer game, and Kawhi started on Carmelo for the first quarter, and then Paul George guarded him the second quarter. So it's like teams are realizing, oh crap, we actually have to guard this guy. And the fact that they're using their two best defenders, and I know it's also a matchup situation, but the fact that they're putting their two best defenders on him at different points throughout the game gives some credence that he's definitely impacting the game.
Look, Carmelo is a better player than what his reputation has suggested over the last year since he retired, and even for the year or so before he retired the first time when he was with Oklahoma City and Houston. He obviously didn't live up to what either one of those teams thought potentially he could give them. But he's still a good player. I mean, he's a good player. I just don't know that if you're relying on Carmelo Anthony at this point in his career to play 30 minutes a game, I don't know what your ceiling is. And to your go ahead.
I was going to say, do you know what team I think is going to look back and say, oh, crap, we should have signed him? It's I think Milwaukee.
Who?
I think Milwaukee. Okay? I think that he could have been someone. And right now, listen, Milwaukee's playing outstanding. Like, really, really playing
Isn't Carmelo, though, just a, I don't know, depending on how you want to look at it, isn't he just a better or worse version of Jabari Parker?
Oh, come on now. Wait a second.
I'm saying at this point right now, and at this point in his career, isn't he the same, again, not a complete identical look-in-the-mirror comparison, but more of a shoot-first guy, not necessarily a passer or distributor, a guy who kind of holds the ball, a guy who's not a high-percentage three-point shooter, not necessarily going to do a great job of spreading the floor. He's a scorer who's not scoring from the three-point line and layups. He's more of a mid-range player. I just don't. Now, again, Milwaukee, we've been talking about them, and we'll talk about them a little bit later. They're just killing it. But long-term, you look at them in the playoffs matching up against these better teams, and, you know, they might end up being a guy short, but I don't know that Carmelo's that guy. I mean, sure, could he maybe help him in the regular season? Yes. Does he push them over the top of beating a good team in the playoffs? No. I think the same question that applies in Portland would apply in Milwaukee or anywhere else he might have gone.
All right. I just think. All right.
Look, I think he's going to continue to be just as productive as he's been to this point, as long as he keeps getting the minutes. My question is, and I don't think he impacts winning. Now, he's soaking up minutes that he might be better than the guy that Portland would, you know, have in there otherwise. But as far as getting them an opportunity to really advance in the Western Conference playoffs, I just don't see it. Now, we've talked about the bottom of the West before, but you're looking at right now, Phoenix is the number 8 seed, and they're 9-10 below 500.
And they're plummeting. So, they just look like a completely different team. They're 3-7 over the last 10. They just look bad now.
Yeah, and I don't think they played above their heads probably at the beginning of the season. and I don't expect them to finish in the playoffs. I mean, we didn't expect them at the beginning of the season, and I think even with the hot start, I think you thought, well, maybe they can hang around slightly below 500, but there's no way that you really thought, oh, this team is going to be a playoff team. And I'm looking at that list of teams that aren't in the playoffs, and Sacramento has climbed out of the out of the hole, even though they're only 5-5 in their last 10, but they're 8-11. They're a game back of the Suns. New Orleans is way down at the bottom, but if they get Zion back and he's as good as everybody thinks he is, they have an opportunity to crawl back in it. That leads us to our next topic of conversation, the San Antonio Spurs. Oof. And what do the Spurs do? Where do they go from here? What's your take on that?
Well, I think they have to make trades, Mike. I just don't see how they can keep it the way everything the way it is. Now, I know tonight they're playing Houston, and the last time I checked, they didn't have Aldridge tonight, Mike, but San Antonio eked out a victory over Houston, 134-133 in double overtime. So, impressive, considering LaMarcus Aldridge didn't play. Harden had a chance to win it, and at the end of overtime, he splitted two defenders and missed a runner, and you said, oh, wait a second. When I told you that, you said, oh, wait, James Harden didn't come through in the clutch? What a shocker. But anyways, I have to say, I think the Spurs have to make trades. I just don't think that they can stand pat. You know, they've got I think DeRozan's an expiring, right?
Yes, he is.
So I think DeRozan's going to get moved. I don't see him finishing the season on the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I don't know what team makes a play for him and what exactly it looks like. Now, I saw the one guy we had on from the Jazz. I don't know if you saw his tweet tonight. I can't think of his guy's name. He said that they should trade Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, and someone else for LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan.
Say that trade again.
I'm gonna try to find it. It was DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge for Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, and someone else, and they think that Utah would be better.
Yeesh, man. I mean, okay. So let's first take a look at DeMar DeRozan. What is DeMar DeRozan shooting from three-point land this year?
Probably not good. He made his first three the other day. I'm pretty sure I read something.
He's pumping in 0.1 threes per game.
Yeah.
So that's not a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a lot. If I was Utah, look, I know why he's saying that, because Conley's been pitiful. I mean, you look at his statistics, and he's down across the board, and he has not been nearly what they thought he was going to be. And as a result of that, Utah's not where they thought they would be collectively as a team. They're only three games above 500 at 12-9. And they're sitting in the number six spot.
Okay, so here's the trade. Here's the trade. I found it. It was Brandon Taz Cannon. Here it is. DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge for Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, and Dante Exum. Salaries match up.
All right, so let's take that from both sides. So San Antonio is bringing in Conley, who might be washed. I don't know. I mean, you could say he's off to a slow start, but, he's down across the board. Joe Ingles, does Joe Ingles fit with a rebuilding San Antonio Spurs team? Not really. And then Exum, who's been just, let's put it kindly, he's been very mercurial, and he's also been injury prone. So he's the only, quote, young guy, and I don't know. Doesn't he positionally overlap with the guys they already have, DeJounte Murray and Derek White? So to me, for San Antonio, that makes no sense. And I guess for Utah, if you're saying Conley's not very good and Ingles has gotten off to a pretty poor start this season, yeah, maybe those two guys are upgrades, but man, I don't know. If I was either team, I wouldn't do that if I was either
Hollinger's
team.
Hollinger's analysis, according to the ESPN trade machine, would be that the projected win total would be increased by 11 for Utah, and the San Antonio's would be down 13.
Yeah, I mean, San Antonio gets nothing out of that.
Well, theoretically. Without a pick, I think a pick would have to be included in that to make
it. Yeah, I mean, there's no way you just trade those players. Theoretically, I guess the Jazz would be better if you add DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. But I just, man, DeMar DeRozan doesn't fit with Utah's defensive-minded team. He's never been a good defender. Aldridge can be a good defender, and he has some strengths, but I'm not sure that plugging those two guys into what you have left in Utah after, I mean, you're going to play Gobert and Aldridge together. You're going to play Donovan Mitchell and DeMar DeRozan together. I don't like that trade for either team.
Okay.
And that's the thing. That's the thing with DeRozan. What team wants a guy who's a minus defender and doesn't shoot threes? Like, where does...
Well, when you said minus defender, I thought Houston Rockets, but then you said doesn't shoot threes, and I checked out.
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't shoot threes. I don't know what contending team looks at DeMar DeRozan as this guy's a piece that puts us over the top. Because there's no way a team in the middle of the pack or a rebuilding team.
I always seem to throw these guys out here. So you don't think he'd do well with the Lakers, right? I mean,
I know, because he doesn't help space the floor. I mean, the Lakers need guys who can shoot.
Okay,
I mean, that's what you're looking for. Is you want people who are going to spread the floor so LeBron and AD can go to work.
What about Milwaukee?
DeRozan's just gonna clog that up. Same thing.
I mean, yeah.
You want the floor spread for Giannis. I mean, there's really nowhere. Like, I look at next year in free agency this summer, what team is talking themselves into giving DeMar DeRozan a big contract? You know, if it's 20 years ago, maybe. But in today's league, okay, a guy who just flat out refuses to shoot threes, no. I don't know where he goes.
Okay, what about Toronto? Bring it back, baby.
Toronto's not trading for him.
No, I'm saying next year, offseason. Next year.
Oh, so, I mean.
Bring him back.
I think once you trade him, I think he's out. I mean, I know he's well-liked there, but no, it's a no.
Okay.
All right, listen. I don't know where he goes. I mean, he's going to go somewhere, but what's the price tag? I mean, is DeMar DeRozan going to make, can he make $12 million? Would you sign him for the Cavs for $12 million a year?
Sure.
You would?
He's better than people on our roster.
I mean, I guess you sign him for a year or two, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say him for a 3-year $12 million a year deal.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah. It'll be interesting.
Years for $12 million a year or 2 years for $15 a year?
All right, I think no. I would decline.
Okay.
I'd say thank you very much, DeMar. Time to move on, buddy. Go talk to another team. Although he would be far and away leading the Cavs in assists, dishing out 4.5. He'd be like the John Stockton of the Cavs.
Oh, okay. Oh, I just saw the last play of the Rockets game. Can you take a guess as to who missed a shot to win the game?
James Harden,
he plowed through a guy. They didn't call a charge. They didn't call a blocking foul. It was clearly one or the other. The refs didn't call anything. They swallowed their whistles, and he missed the shot.
Did you see the Twitter exchange or the exchange he had with the fan? I saw it on Twitter.
No, I didn't see that.
Before we jumped down here. Some fan yelled out. He had just gotten fouled and was going to the line, and some fan yelled out, "Hey, we don't want to see a foul shooting contest." And he said, "Yeah, we don't want to see fouls either." And so it was like they went back and forth. Harden was yelling at the guy from the, you know, while he was going up to the line saying, we don't want to see fouls. So it was kind of funny. So he basically missed two opportunities to finish with game winners.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you feel about that?
All right, well, like I said, it's par for the course, and I'm in a prove it to me stage with James Harden.
Yep.
I just, It doesn't. I mean, his lack of coming through in big moments doesn't surprise me ever. So until he proves me wrong, I'll keep talking about it.
All right. So
I don't know. So the Spurs got a. The bottom line is, San Antonio, whatever they have going now, isn't working. I agree. They have to trade or try to trade LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. But I don't know what the market. I would think there's a bigger market. As weird as it sounds, I would think there's a bigger market for LaMarcus Aldridge, because I just don't know what team that's a contending team is talking themselves into DeMar DeRozan, and there's no team that's a young team that's rebuilding that's going
to
say.
I think LaMarcus Aldridge to the Celtics is a very high possibility, Mike. I really think that he would fit with them.
I mean, yeah, he'd make sense. He'd make sense with the Celtics. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm. And,
but what do they give up? What do they give up for him? I mean, Aldridge is how old is he now? Let's see.
20 or 31, 32.
So he was born in 1985.
Oh shoot, July, he's older than me. He's older than me.
He's like
34.
So he's like 30. He's 34.
Wow, so he's older than me. That's impressive. How much does he
have? So how much does he have left? I mean, I don't know. It's a matter of, again, how much do you get? How much do you give up? And how much do you think he pushes you over the top to
give you an opportunity to win a title? I still think Boston could be a landing spot. I think Miami could be a landing spot, depending on their situation and where they end up being. But they're playing so well right now.
There's no chance of Spurs rebound, though, right?
No, zero. I think it's the end of the era officially. I think this is going to be the first year in, what is it, 20 seasons that the Spurs don't make the playoffs? Something like that.
I agree. I don't see any way they crawl out of this.
Yeah.
And I see them staying out of the Western Conference playoff picture, regardless of whether they stand pat or they end up trading these guys. I think no matter what happens, I think they're effectively, the dynasty is effectively being pronounced dead, at least here on the Hoopheads pod.
Yep. All right. So next Western Conference item to talk about, Paul George's return. Because, you know, I guess we kind of neglected to discuss it when we talked last week about the kind of impact that he's had. And obviously he's been huge. He had like the third most points in a Clipper debut. I think he had, what, 33, was it? I think was in his first game. He's just played really, really well. And so I was watching the game tonight, and I know we talked about it a little bit, but I haven't realized this, that they have not practiced together at all, Mike. Kawhi and Paul George. To start at any point, they have not practiced once together because of Paul George's injury, and then they don't have practices when they don't have 2 days off. So the closest thing to a practice they had was one day, I guess, at walkthrough in the last few days. They said, hey, let's play a little 5-on-5 to get some work in, but that was essentially it. They have not practiced one practice together since the two signed with the Clippers this offseason.
All right, so I know it's kind of a tangent here, but that's one of the things that's amazing about NBA basketball is, you know, a guy gets traded, or in this case here, he comes back from injury, and they've never practiced together, and they're out there playing and winning NBA games and running a functional NBA offense. It just shows you, one, how basketball smart most of these guys are, how much time and prep work they're doing off the floor, whether it's film study or just going through with coaches and understanding what their roles are and what they're supposed to do. When you think about trying to project that to like a high school team or a college team, I mean, the idea of being able to go out and play a game or function with teammates having never practiced is almost unbelievable. And yet, as you said, most NBA teams are practicing very, very little during their seasons. And so the fact that you can just incorporate guys, whether it's off an injury or from a trade, is one of the things that's just amazing to me about NBA basketball. But yeah, the Clippers, look, they're going to be, I don't think anything's changed from what we said about them from the very beginning. When you put both of those guys out on the floor,
and Harrell,
you have, right, and Harrell and
Lou Williams
and Beverly, let's say that's your lineup.
And Zubac hasn't been terrible when he's on the floor. Now, he doesn't play a lot of minutes because of his position, but when he's on the floor, he's not terrible.
Yeah, they have Harkless, and Jamichael Green's been playing pretty good. I mean, they haven't really had Shamet all that much, so he's been, you know, out with his injury, so he's working his way back into the lineup. I mean, the Clippers are good. There's no question. I think if you look at the depth of their roster, they probably have the deepest, most versatile team of any of these title contenders. I you know, are they better at their peak than the Lakers with LeBron, or than Giannis if he's playing at his absolute best. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. I mean, that's what makes this season probably the most interesting one in years, is that there's a lot of unknowns because all these teams are different. They all have pieces, parts that nobody knows for sure. Yeah, we can watch them in the regular season, but we all know that playoff basketball ends up being different than regular season basketball. And I think that's one of the reasons why people were so high on the Clippers. And I think it still stands today based on what we've seen so far since George has returned. And that is just that the Clippers are built to be able to defend lots of different ways. They can play big. They can play small. They have really, what it really comes down to is you have Kawhi, who arguably at the end of last season was the best player in the league. Clearly in the playoffs, he was the best player. You have Paul George, who was, I think he finished third in the MVP vote last year. He was the second or third leading scorer in the league. And then you have Lou Williams, who by all rights has been a closer for, you know, lots of teams here.
You haven't even said Patrick Beverley, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just talking offense, though. I'm saying
I know.
From an offensive standpoint, yeah, I mean, Patrick Beverley can make open threes, but I guess my point here is that Kawhi, Paul George, and Lou Williams have all been number one options on
a team,
really good teams. And to be able to have the luxury of any one of those three guys in clutch moments can get you a basket.
And you can even
big moments.
You could even make the argument that, I mean, Harrell was essentially the number one option last year at times, right? I mean,
he's not necessarily a guy though that you're going to just give the ball to and say, "Hey, go get us a bucket."
Yeah,
I
understand.
Lou Will, George, and Kawhi are all that guy, and most teams, you know, at most they have two. I guess because Lou Williams is their third guy, you don't think of Lou Williams as being that type of player, but really, he is. I mean, he's a guy who has made big shots over the course of his career. He's a guy who can get a shot pretty much anytime he wants. He's kind of comparable in that way to Kyrie, in that, you know, he's a smaller guy that you just give him the ball and, you know, set a screen roll, or just, you know, have him work his magic and he's able to get a shot. And so I think that's what makes the Clippers really dangerous, is their offensive versatility, in that, you know, one of those three guys, two of those three guys could potentially be having an off night, still contribute in other areas of the game, and then have one of those three kind of take over and, you know, be able to carry a team in the fourth quarter. Whereas I don't think any other teams have that three-headed monster offensively that can compare with George, Leonard, and Lou Will. So the Clippers are good, and with Paul George back, you're starting to see what this team can be. And I don't think we're going to fully realize and understand exactly where they're at until we see them in the playoffs. And you know, that means that Kawhi's leg, whatever's going on there, he's got to keep it healthy. Paul George has an injury history where you got to keep him healthy. He's got to be healthy come next May and June if the Clippers want to get where they're going to go. And I think obviously that speaks for every team, but in this case, the Clippers clearly have some injury history that they got to overcome with Kawhi and Paul George. If those two guys stay healthy, you know, they're going to be right there with the best of the Western Conference and have a chance to win the title.
Yeah, I agree. All right, last Western Conference discussion. Hallelujah. I continue to be amazed, Mike, and I think at this point, if I was to say MVP, it's between him and Harden, and I hate Harden, so I'm going to pick him still. I think he has just been – oh, I mean, and I guess Giannis, too. I keep forgetting Giannis. I'll say MVP of the Western Conference is Luka. The fact that he is 20 years old, and once again tonight against the Pelicans, 33-18 – only had 5 assists tonight, which is surprising. But 33-18 and 5, but he only played 28 and a half minutes tonight. And a very efficient 9 of 18, 10 of 13 from the line. And just unbelievable. Sick.
Yeah, here's the thing with Luka. Like, his stat line it's insane. I mean, it really is. That he's over 30 a game. Right now, he's just – I don't know if the stats are updated for tonight's game.
Oh, well, I'm on the NBA. Here you go, Mike. 30.7 points per game, 10.3 rebounds per game, 9.4 assists, 1.4 steals. He's shooting 48.5% from the field, 82% from the line, and he's 33.5% from behind the three-point line.
So he's already back up above. He's back up above 10 rebounds a game from after tonight. So he's averaging above 30, more than 10 rebounds, just a shade under 9 or a shade under 10 assists. But to me, the biggest thing that puts him into the MVP discussion, the stat line is impressive. The stat line is great. But what puts him in the MVP category is the winning. I mean, Dallas is now, what, 14-6?
Dallas is 14-6. They are currently fourth place in the Western Conference.
All right, so I know you had them in the playoffs, but I know you didn't have them in the top four.
No, I had them at 7, and I think. I think I had them at 7. Yeah. And so San Antonio,
I don't think anybody else – I mean, I don't think there was anybody who said this team – and, again, there's a long way to go in the season, so I'm not necessarily sure that they're going to finish ahead of Houston or Utah. But at worst, that puts them probably in the sixth seed because I don't see – if Luka continues to play at this level, I don't see them falling behind any of those teams, you know, from 7 through whatever 13 or 14 there. I don't see them falling behind any of those teams.
Yep.
And so the fact that he has Dallas winning, and Porzingis has been a little bit better lately, but he hasn't really played to the way that I think people thought maybe he, you know, the level that he could play at. And so he's working his way back from his injury, of course.
He only had 7 points tonight. He only played 17 minutes tonight, Mike.
But, okay, so, you know, we've said that Porzingis hasn't been good, but I'm looking at his season stats. So he's averaging 17 a game. He's getting 9.2 rebounds a game. Now he's down in the Colin Sexton area for assists at 1.4.
He was 2 of 11 tonight, Mike. Oof.
And look, he hasn't been great, but he hasn't been as terrible as everybody has kind of made it out to be. Now, he's not shooting the ball well. I think he's only shooting like 40% from the field, 35% from three, and he's got to find his way. But if your second or third best guy on your team can average 17 and 9, you're probably doing, you know, you're probably doing okay. And I think the bottom line is Luka makes everybody better. And
yep.
Luka makes it easier for these guys to get shots. He finds you with passes that most ordinary players don't find. And like I said, the stat line's crazy, but what really matters is that Dallas is 14-6 when nobody, and I mean nobody, thought that's where they were going to be. And there's a long way to go in the season. I get it. But if he keeps playing this way, he's going to be right there for the MVP. Yep. I mean, he has to be. I don't see how, if you project Dallas's record out and say they're going to play at a 14-6 clip the rest of the way.
It's 20 games, so times that by 4, that's 56 wins.
You multiply if Dallas gets to 50, yeah, if Dallas gets to 56 wins or 57 wins, the Bucks are going to have to win 60 at least for Giannis to hold them off. Now, again, Giannis's stats are ridiculous too. Giannis is averaging a 30-13-6 and leading the league in PER. And the funny thing is with Giannis is you look at the stats that he's putting up and he's only averaging like 32 minutes a game.
Well, it's because they've been in blowout situations.
Right. I mean, Milwaukee's just killing people. I mean, they're 18.
They beat New York by 40 the other day.
Yeah. I mean, like I said last time, you look at Milwaukee's roster and I'm sorry, but their roster compared to these other top teams just doesn't compare. I mean, when you say that, I mean, who's that?
Kyle Korver, baby.
I mean, I guess Middleton's their second best player, but I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Middleton's averaging 17 and 5 rebounds. Bledsoe has been good again in the regular season, but he was good in the regular season last year. That's why they signed with that extension that, you know, in the playoffs, people were beating their head against the wall saying, how could they have signed this guy? And he's played well. I mean, he's played well so far this season. He's averaging 15 a game. He's almost 6 assists. What's he shooting from the field? He's shooting 46% from the field, only 30% from three. But he's never been a great three-point shooter. So, I don't know. I just think what Giannis is doing is incredible. And at his size and what he's been able to, you know, the stats that he's been able to put up, and the fact that Milwaukee's 18-3 with the guys that they have. I mean, wow, he's just, Giannis is taking almost 5 threes a game. He's only making them 30%, but still, he's taking them. And man, it's gonna be hard to unseat Giannis if the Bucks keep winning at this pace. Let's put it that way. Yeah. As great as Luka's been.
Yeah, I agree. Sadly, I'm a huge Luka fan, but I will say I'm ready to say that Luka will win 2 MVPs before his career is over.
If he's doing what he's doing now, at age 20. I mean, so if you look at let's take that claim that you just made and project it out over who are the guys that are Giannis's age or younger. So Giannis is 25. So 25
Ben Simmons, and maybe
25 and under guys, who are guys that are potential MVP candidates besides Giannis and Luka, who are under 25.
Ben Simmons, right? Yeah. I'd say possibly.
Maybe. I don't think he's ever going to be in either one of their classes as a scorer.
We're forgetting Colin Sexton and Zion, who hasn't played a game. Would you be willing to say Trae Young has the opportunity to, depending, or is that not happening?
I don't know. I think you have to be transcendent. I mean, you're talking like the Steve Nash, Steph Curry type guys who are basically revolutionary players. I'm not sure that Trae Young is revolutionary. I mean, he's going to be really, really good, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking down the standings and thinking of guys from every team who potentially are MVP candidates. Jokic.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, Carmelo Anthony must have been weightlifting while he was out, because Patrick Patterson literally got nudged by him and went flying, and they called a foul on Carmelo. And Carmelo just looked at the referee like, seriously, I didn't even do anything. It was pretty impressive.
There you go. Well, I think it may be Giannis and Luka trading MVPs back and forth.
That would be pretty awesome. I mean, if you think about it, we haven't had a good, like, MVP... I won't call the Harden versus Westbrook MVP like stuff. I wouldn't call that exciting and fun, because neither of them were very good MVPs that I would like enjoy.
It's funny because, like, you know, as those two guys, like, I mean, Westbrook averaged a triple double, which I know whatever the counting stats are, what they are, and he was chasing rebounds and all the anti-Russ stuff and Harden, but I don't know, like, those two guys just don't. I don't know.
It's not exciting to watch basketball, and now they're on the same team.
No, so. they're just, I don't know, they're just not, like, I like how hard Russ plays, but I don't think he always plays smart, and then conversely, we know what my issues are with Harden, so I don't know. You compare that to a Magic Bird duel for MVP, and yeah, I'll take Magic and Bird over Harden versus Westbrook anytime.
So Giannis
against Luka would be fun.
And in this whole conversation, we have not mentioned LeBron once, Mike. I don't want to say that he has a chance to win the MVP, because I don't really think he does. But the fact that, I mean, I still think he's probably the best player, even at his age, the best player. He could be, like, if you were taking someone right now other than, like, if you were picking a player to take and say, hey, I want this guy on my team because he's going to do that, I probably would take Giannis and Luka, but LeBron would be third, right?
All right, well, the question becomes, if you wanted to take a guy for the remainder of this season to help you win a title, if you wanted to start a team that was going to win a title this year, what guy would you pick?
Probably would take LeBron, right? I mean, for this season.
I think you'd be hard-pressed not to start your team with LeBron. Yeah, you'd be very hard-pressed not to start with LeBron.
The question is, once you start to project out, you say, okay, now you're taking someone for the next 2 or 3 seasons. That's when you start wondering.
Then it becomes a different equation, because at some point, his superhumanness is going to wear off. I mean, who knows when that's going to be?
Hey, man, look at Tom Brady threw for 325 yards and two touchdowns the other night. I mean,
right. I mean, and he has, I mean, we know what he does, his routine for taking care of his body and the amount of money that he spends on medical treatments and things that help him to stay healthy and sleep and all that stuff. And so he's definitely unique in that way. But yeah, I think if you were starting a team just to win this year's title, I think it would be three guys. It would come down to you'd either take LeBron, you'd take Kawhi, or you'd take Giannis. I think one of those three would probably be the guy that you'd pick. And then if you projected out, who would you want for the next 5 years?
I think Luka and Giannis would be 1-2, right? One way or the other.
Lucas and Giannis would be one-two. You might throw Anthony Davis in there if he could stay healthy. I think that's why I'd lean towards Giannis, seems more durable. Luka, it seems like at this point, through whatever, a season and a quarter, he seems like he's going to be pretty durable and tough and able to, you know, power through and not get hurt. So,
yeah,
I think it could be interesting that moving forward over the next 5 years that the two best players in the league could end up being, you know, two guys who are, you know, not born in the United States, which is interesting.
Yep.
And fun. And they're both fun to watch. I mean, they're both guys that, you know, when you turn on the TV or when you go see them in person, they're guys that are fun to watch, and it should be a fun, it's two good faces for the league.
Yep.
Two good guys to have out in front.
All right. So two more things we want to discuss. The first, can Toronto really keep it up? I'm just more and more impressed by the way that they're playing, and I know that they ended up losing to Miami tonight in overtime, but the fact that these guys are out there playing like a team that are trying to defend a title, the fact they lost their best player, is pretty amazing. And I don't think, and who knows, I don't personally think that they can keep this up for the season and that they're going to be really a contender for the Eastern Conference Finals or the Finals in general. But how crazy, and Mike, just thinking about this, how crazy would it be if somehow, some way, it ended up being a Clippers-Toronto Finals? Wouldn't that be amazing? I think that would be amazing.
It would be. I mean, I don't think it's likely. I still think that Milwaukee or Philly are one of those two teams are going to come out of the East, despite Boston's good start. I still think that the ceiling is highest for Milwaukee because of Giannis, and Philly just because of their size. And I think if they can figure it out and put it together, I still think they're going to be better. But Toronto has been incredible, and they've been incredible partly because, you know, you think about these guys were, some of them were part of some of the LeBronto beatdowns. And I know DeMar DeRozan, who we already discussed ad nauseum earlier, was a huge factor in that. And I was on record a bunch of times on here denigrating playoff Kyle Lowry, and he played clearly much, much better and did come through in the postseason last year. And so kudos to Kyle Lowry, but he's been out, you know, I mean, he's only played 8 games this season. I think it's surprising. You look at what Siakam has done, and we've gone over his, you know, his credentials for being a most improved player for the second year in a row. He's averaging a 25 and 8 to go along with 4 assists. But then you look at Fred VanVleet, who, again, he was he undrafted or a second round pick? Now I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure he was a second. I think he was a second round pick. But
he's averaging 18 a game, and he's averaging 7.5 assists.
He's a better version of Matthew Dellavedova.
I mean, VanVleet's been great. I mean, he's not like. It's not like he's a guy who's like, oh, yeah, Fred VanVleet, he's pretty good for an average dude. He's good. Like, I mean, he's legit.
I think he gets better every time he has a kid, so look out if he has another kid, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's been really good. Ananobi coming back from injury, although, you know, he's only scoring 11 points a game, but he's a physical defender that gives him a lot of positional versatility. I mean, I guess for me, it comes down to what's Siakam's playoff scoring alpha dog ceiling. And if you think Siakam is on the level with other guys who are the number one option on a finals contending team, then yeah, I mean, if Toronto's healthy, maybe they have a puncher's chance to get back with their championship experience and the guys that they have and the improvements that they've made. Do they have a chance? I wouldn't say no completely, but I would still be surprised because I don't think, as good as Siakam's been, I don't know that in a playoff series, push comes to shove, that Siakam can go basket for basket with some of the better teams in the league. I could be wrong, but I don't know if he's there yet. Maybe he's a year away from that. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they can. As fun as that would be to watch them play against Kawhi in the finals, I just don't think that's happening. So,
yeah, I would be very surprised. I would be surprised. I mean, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. I'm not saying there's a 0% chance, but I don't know. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. All right. Last thing, we got to talk about the Cavs a little bit here. Oof. They've looked bad, I don't know, the last 2 weeks. And they have like a glimmer of hope, but then they just look bad again. They looked okay at the beginning of the game tonight, and then it just, the floor fell out beneath them. Sexton and Garland have not been playing well. And they kind of just, it doesn't look like they're, it looks like what I thought they were going to look like over the last, 2 weeks was what the season was going to look like. So, I think, like I said before, I didn't have a high ceiling for them to start the season. So I'm not overly surprised, but at the same time, based on what we saw the first few weeks, I was very surprised at how quickly it kind of fell apart.
Yeah, it's fallen apart really fast. And it went from where it seemed like they were having fun and being together to where now it just seems like they're kind of, I don't want to say going through the motions, but it just doesn't feel like the things that made us worry about the Sexton-Garland pairing when we drafted Darius Garland, I think we're starting to see that when you have two little guys who's, again, their main MO is both of them want to score, and I think both of them are probably more effective with the ball in their hands because I think Garland likes to create shots off the dribble more so than catch and shoot. And although I think Sexton, he's shooting almost 4 threes a game. He's shooting it at 33%, which for a starting NBA point guard is not where you need him to be if you want to have any kind of playoff success long term. And they just don't, I don't know, they're neither one of them to me shows the ability to distribute the ball the way you'd want to have a lead guard distribute it.
Yep.
Garland's shooting 38% from the field. I feel like every time I watch him, he gets worse. And he just seems lost out there. He doesn't seem particularly quick or athletic to me, at least when I watch him. I don't know. I'm starting to get a little worried that maybe even being an average player, I'm a little worried about Darius Garland right now.
Yeah, I think we have to remember too, though. I mean, I felt like at the beginning of the year, Sexton looked good last year, and then the middle
yeah, he fell off,
but then at the end of the season he looked better again. And I don't want to jump to any super conclusions yet, but I am definitely I'm a little weary on it for sure.
So, I don't see Darius Garland exploding and becoming an NBA All-Star, let's put it that way.
Okay. I don't see that.
There's nothing that he's shown me that I point to and say he's going to be above average in the NBA at that. He's not going to be an above average NBA passer. He's not, like I said, super quick. I don't think his shooting, which is the one thing, and being able to create a shot off the dribble, I don't think he's been particularly good at that. He loves shooting that little floater that doesn't go in very often.
I like to shoot that shot too.
Well, hey, I understand. It's a fun shot to take, but you got to be able to make it.
I also like to take a half court behind the.
You do like to take those. You do like to take
those. Made one of those tonight, Mike. It was impressive. There you go.
That's good. Nice work. Yeah. Good job. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this team. All I know is that they might as well lose as much as they can and see if we, again, our only chance is to find a transcendent guy in the draft.
I was
going
to say, here's the question, Mike. I mean, at this point last year, we were already talking about tanking for Zion. I don't even know who we're tanking for.
LaMelo.
LaMelo or that guy that can't play? What's
James Wiseman?
Yeah, I mean,
Memphis, the big guy. But I don't know. I wouldn't take a 7-foot guy number one in the NBA.
Come on,
draft
the Phoenix Suns took.
right. So they took Ayton instead of taking Luka. I mean, even when teams valued big men higher, I would always cringe. Like, you're not even probably going to remember these references, but the John Konkaks and Joe Kleins of the world,
who?
These big guys. Who, you don't remember either of those guys? Those are way before your time.
I have no idea who those guys are, Mike.
Those are two Caucasian centers that were drafted in the top, at least the top 10, maybe even the
top
5.
What was John's last name?
John Konkak.
John Konkak, and you had to clarify that was a Caucasian?
Hey, I'm sorry. And Joe Klein. You know, even back then, you know, you cringe when they take these big guys. You're like, well, what's this guy's ceiling? Like, what's the best that this guy can be? Now, Wiseman may be very, very good. DeAndre Ayton is probably going to be a good player and put up good stats, but I just don't think you're building a championship team in today's NBA around the center. And maybe Embiid's going to prove us wrong, but until he does, I still think I'd rather have my best player be a guy on the wing, you know, that 6'6 to 6'9 guy who can do everything on both ends of the floor. And so I'm not sure that I would be looking to take Wiseman. I think I'd look elsewhere. So, yeah, I don't know. I haven't watched enough college basketball.
Yeah, it's too early for me to make any,
have an opinion.
It's too early for me to make any speculation on college basketball, since the only thing I know is that who Duke lost to, Stephen F. Austin. That's about the extent of which I know what's going on in the college basketball. I know that Duke beat Michigan State tonight. That's the other thing I know. That's about it.
All right. Well, they bounced back from losing to Stephen F. Austin at home.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's gonna be a long season for the Cavs. I hope they keep Kevin Love and Tristan healthy, and that at some point between now and the trading deadline, we're able to trade both of those guys and get some more pieces in here that potentially can help us to grow and build with the core that we have. And I don't know, like I said, I hate to give up on Sexton and Garland, and I don't think I'm necessarily giving up on them, but I'm a little dubious that they're ever going to be able to succeed playing alongside one another, because I just think their skill sets are too similar and not dynamic enough.
It's almost like they're counterproductive. They're play styles, right? I mean,
they're redundant. You don't need both of them. You need one or the other, and then you need somebody who does something different or is a different size or brings different skill sets to the table. I don't know. I don't know what the future is for those two guys playing together in the same backcourt. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, I think we covered most everything. I don't know if there's anything else that jumps out at you that we didn't hit on.
Lakers beat the Nuggets tonight. That would be about it. That was the only other thing that I saw continuing to just dominate the West, and even the best West team. So I think the Lakers are in good position for the number one seed when it comes playoff time.
Yeah, and the Lakers, if they stay healthy, that's the big caveat. You keep Anthony Davis and you keep LeBron healthy, and you get to May, and I think the Lakers are going to have a really good chance of making it to the finals and potentially winning the title if those two guys are healthy and at their best. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they manage those two and manage their desire to, you know, how much the number one seed is going to mean to them as you go forward and how many minutes and games those two guys are going to play to help try to maintain that position. I think the one thing that benefits all these Western Conference teams at the top, though, is the fact that the bottom of the West is seemingly
pitiful,
worse than a lot of people anticipated. And there's a lot more teams bunched up there at the bottom than people thought. And
yep.
So it kind of softens up the schedule for comparatively to what maybe the West has been the last few years. Cause it just, those teams just haven't been as good this year for whatever reason.
Yep,
so.
Agree.
All right. Well, that was good. Thanks for checking in with us, everybody. We appreciate you listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.